Hello, FPL managers. Welcome to episode 85 of the FPL Optimized podcast. I'm your solo host today, Sertab, diving into the analytical depths of fantasy football with two remarkable guests. This is the podcast that we combine analytics with the eye test, data org graphs, or data and graphs. That's the question. Buzz kindly accepted skipping this episode as we have two amazing managers from the analytics community instead. Let me introduce my guest today as we will be unwrapping the layers of fantasy football analytics and several aspects of playing these games at the highest levels. First of all, both of our guests are named Jack, so there might be some confusions when I'm asking questions. But first up, we have Vamps. I will just use your nickname through this episode. Vamps is a predictive modeling wizard whose expertise spans across various fantasy games globally. Vamps share his projections for several fantasy football games. Is it only football? I think it's football, right?
Formula One, but I don't share that one.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Cheeky.
Yeah, several fantasy football games currently for 17 games and counting, as well as spreadsheets for people to use optimization for these games. And this is just beyond FPL. And his current FPL rank is 124. Amazing. And he's also 8th in Real Fever England and 12th in Gaffer and 12th in Italian Fantasy, among many other great current and historical ranks that I can list here. Which is funny because I saw a tweet about people saying that, yeah, in FPL analytics are winning, but in other games, I'm just destroying them, which is not correct at all. Like, people don't know, so they're happy.
Our little secret, which is now not a secret.
Not a secret anymore, yeah. And joining Vamps is Jack, a seasoned fantasy football manager who leverages Vamps models to achieve remarkable success. Jack is a very active member of our FPL Analytics Discord, too, and a great analytics manager overall. He is 59th in FPL, 9th in Scottish Fantasy Game, and 45th in Sky. Do you have 45th. Two teams or just one?
Yeah, yeah, two teams. I got one that's 45th and one that's 190th.
Oh, that's amazing. And around 600 in fan teams. So just like great ranks everywhere. And let me say welcome to both of you. And why don't you introduce yourself so our listeners can get a better idea about you? And let's start with you, Vamps.
Well, I'm a 39-year-old old man, as I get reminded quite regularly by the younger ones. I'm a dad, got two boys. My wife, been with her 13 years. But unfortunately for her, football was my first passion in life. And my dad was taking me to Notts County games when I was younger, from about the age of 4 or 5. But I moved away from Nottingham for work and I came to Walsall and started supporting a non-league team called Rushall Olympic. We were like level 6 of the English pyramid, basically a bus stop in Walsall, massive underdogs in the league they're in, the highest they've ever been in their whole careers. And we've got a really big game on Saturday to try and stay in the league. From a professional point of view, I'm now in health and safety. I'm a health and safety manager, so it will explain why I'm very risk averse.
Thank you, and let's hear from Jack before we start with the questions.
Yeah, so Jack Bones, the chief emoji officer in the Discord, eclectic exchanger. But yeah, lifelong West Ham fan, you know, play a lot of fantasy games, so a bit of degenerate with fantasy games. Yeah, pretty much it.
Yeah, and I just need, well, we talk about jerseys at the end of the episode, but I just want to talk about the jerseys you are wearing at the beginning. I will talk about what Jack is wearing. Jack is wearing a Japan jersey. And the reason, I will explain, the reason is there was a game week. Was it last season? It should be last season, right?
Yeah, so, it was around 36 last season, I think.
Yeah, we were talking about watches, Japanese watches, and we said we need to captain Mitoma in one game week. And everyone backed out eventually, except Jack. But Jack said, I can captain Mitoma only if you give me a special role in Discord. I said, yeah, I can do it. I didn't think he will do it. He did it. And then I gave him the last samurai role in Discord that no one else has, and it has like, and in terms of ranking the roles, it is at the top, so no one else can get it without my approval. So yeah, I'm so happy that you're wearing a Japan jersey because of it.
That was it, yeah.
And Vamps, what kind of jersey are you wearing today?
Russian Olympic, had to wear it because I'm going to be at the game on Saturday and I'm going to show the lads. So a little bit of advertising from a little team.
That looks perfect. Okay, so now let's start with the questions. People who are using analytics for fantasy football, they either come from an analytics background and learn about fantasy football along the way. But for most people, they have been playing fantasy football for a long time, or maybe for a few years, I should say. And then they learn about analytics and they just want to learn about it. And I'm just wondering how you guys ended up in at this point. So again, let's start with Vamps. Like, did you have an analytics background and then found fantasy football, or is it the other way around?
I think, as I said already, my love for football was first. And, you know, when I was growing up, the memories I got of my dad, my granddad going to watch Notts County games was always at the forefront of me growing up. And I don't think I'll ever regret it or ever change it, you know. But my dad was the reason why I went into fantasy football originally. I remember the first one I played was World Cup 1994. And my dad told me I finished in the top 100. Now, I would never be able to know this. I don't know for certain. But I know I picked, my front line was Stoichkov, Romario and Baggio. And I had a midfield of Maradona, John Harkes. I had Cafu as a defender, but he didn't even play a minute. All I did was basically go off what my magazine said when I was 10 years mm-hmm. old. And that's how it started for me. But over the years, my dad used to run cricket fantasy games for his mates at work, and I think it just caught that bug from there, really, where I used to play the Sun, I used to play Telegraph usually with the football. But then I'd say probably when I got to sort of mid-teens, I would stop playing, and I didn't play again for a while. I don't know why, it really was an interest. Life got in the way, I suppose. But I moved into an analytics role at work about 2011, so when I started doing FPL about 2016, 2017, which was when I started doing it when my manager invited me into the league, I would say I was grass at that point. I'm not going to lie about it. I was grass for a little while. I remember game week 27 of my first season, I captained Benteke because I thought he had a good fixture. I mean, no one does that. But that's what I was, you know, but that's what I did. But I soon found the analytics bug when I started on Fantasy Football Scout. And I think that's where a lot of people early days were there, because that's where the community was. And I found very quickly the EV model that they had at the time. And that was really when I started looking into how analytics works. And then FPL Review came along, and I think that changed all of us. Anyone who was into it, that changed all of us. And that curiosity for me at that point was then, well, what about other games? What can I do? And this is something I can build. And I just got, because I was building reports at work, where Excel is kind of my thing. And I just started doing it. And I used to do it all by hand. I think the first one I did was Eliteserien, because the Norwegian one, because that's probably my second favorite of all of them. And I just started making my own models. So from a weird point of view, I found football, then analytics, then found FPL with analytics. It's kind of a strange, I'm a bit of everything, really. It's a bit of a mess, but it got me to the point where I'm now where, yeah, I couldn't play fantasy football without a model. Let's be honest. I don't think I could.
Yeah, I agree. I think the same. Like, if there were no models, I think I would stop playing FPL. People will be mad to hear about this, but yeah, that's the reality of it. I understand. And how about you, Jack? How did you end up in this corner of the FPL world?
So, I mean, sort of starting playing fantasy football, I started playing Sky with my dad, maybe about 8-9 years ago. And that was sort of my first game for maybe 5 years, up until I started playing FPL maybe 4 or 5 seasons ago. And I'd say I was still, I'm probably still more grass than the majority of managers that we chat with daily. But I ended up in the Discord from getting an invite in a group with Luke, or Disable, as we know him. And he sort of just said to us, oh, look, join this group. There's a different way that people are playing. And I think that was sort of around the time that he started using the models and stuff as well. First season of using the model, I wasn't really following it too much. I was still sort of creating my own narrative through the model. So whatever the model was telling me, I would juice the minutes up and down different ways and sort of still get the moves that I was thinking of making. But now I've sort of seen the light and I've started playing properly with the models. It's made a huge difference to my fantasy football play.
That's amazing. And let's start with the models. And I think we should start with the question, why? Like, Bams, you generate projection data for many fantasy games, but what's your motivation to do so? Because, like, it is no easy task to generate projections for 17 different games.
I think, as a person, I like to find the answers to questions. I like to find why things happen. I think I've always had a bit of a curiosity with that. And I'm quite, if I've got it in my head to do something, I'm hell bent on it till I get there. Like, it's always been how I am as a person. And when I found that analytics helped me be better at this game, at all the fantasy games I play, it just kind of felt natural to do it. Like, there was no, it kind of took over without me even thinking about it taking over. Like, it takes a lot of time. And it's probably my main hobby, apart from going to Rushall games. You know, it's a few nights a week where I'm doing it. But I like the fact that when I press the button at the end and they run a few solves and they work out what I should be doing, I feel like that relief that I found the answer. Mm-hmm. It helps me make better decisions. It helps me make faster decisions because, again, it's, as much as there is a part of me that, and I do have the element of grass to me in certain aspects, and I'll talk about that later if it comes up, but it's just about getting to that answer. And not only that, it was always going to be for me originally, but I just felt at some point I wanted to go out there and let other people do it and help them make better decisions, because ultimately we're all playing this game together, and the social and interaction aspect of this game is severely underrated.
Yeah, and in terms of the workload, like, is it difficult to maintain these models or like generate projections, and what does the process look like for you?
On a weekly basis, I'll say the certain aspects of it that I'm not skilled in Python, I'm not skilled in collating data off the internet, you know, scraping, that kind of thing. I'm not skilled in those aspects, so I have to find ways to do it that's easier for me while I'm still learning how to do that. So there are aspects of what I do which is manual, where it is typing it in. I mean, when I first started doing this, it was all typed in from my phone or from a second screen. I was typing in manually, and it would take me a long time, whereas now I've got to the point where I'm utilizing the APIs. Certout supported me as well, which has been really great with getting some information from sources that helps me make better minutes decisions. So I would say on a weekly basis, it's all builds up. Well, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday tends to be the data side of things, making sure the player prices are right, that kind of thing. Thursday is probably my heaviest day, and that's purely because I'm getting all the minutes predictions in. And then I start solving, because a lot of these deadlines come on a Friday night. So that's the challenge, where the majority of deadlines now on a Friday, because most countries play Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I'm having to make sure the minutes up to date, run a solve, do my transfers, usually on a Thursday night, which is a long way before I do anything in FPL, let's be honest. But it's just the nature of having to play all the games I do whilst I'm juggling a full-time job, two kids, wife, you know, it's sometimes you have to kind of accept that when the button's pressed and it gives me an answer, I'm going with it. But I wouldn't do it any other way. I think that's the way I do it. And international breaks tend to be the period where I get to do some updates. So if there is things I want to push out and make the models better, mm-hmm. that's when I tend to do a lot of that work. This window is all about Eliteserien and Allsvenskan, which is the Norwegian Swedish leagues. I want to make sure they're in the place because they start again straight after the international break. And then in the summer, probably a period of being able to do a bit more work on the variations of, adding in free transfer value, all that kind of stuff, which I don't currently have in my solvers. It's incremental improvements and trying to make it as slick as possible. So I'm not spending my whole life on it. I do get to give myself a couple of nights every couple of weeks where I'm not doing it. And weekends, I don't touch it at all. That's my one rule. The weekend is for my family, so I will not touch anything on a Saturday or a Sunday.
Well, I should say, like, you're probably one of the most hardworking FPL managers I have ever heard, like, spending lots of time. And people have this, notion that, you know, analytics managers don't really spend too much time on the game. Like, and for you, it's just the other way around. Sounds like I got tired from even, like, listening. That you are using the international break not to rest, but also getting prepared for other games. Like,
well, there's still a deadline this week. MLS has a deadline on Saturday. So I can tell you now that there is a model that I am still releasing and getting the updates ready for Saturday deadline. And to be fair, if there's one game I spend less time on than any of them, it's FPL. That's scary when you say it like that, but it is. Because every other one I have to build with FPL, I'm going to review. I have an FPL model, but I use review. And mm-hmm. I think anyone would, because, you know, it's the best. Let's be honest.
And, Jack, you are using Bamps' models for these different fantasy games, correct?
For a lot of them, yeah. I do sort of... I'm still sort of grass at heart, so there will be times where if there's a player that I've got a feeling about, or if I think that there's a sort of term that me and Vance were using that we're calling players model busters, where they models aren't quick enough to pick up on form changes or position changes or things like that. Majority of the games I do sort of use Vance's models as a baseline for my decisions. And obviously there is a sprinkle of grass chucked in the middle there.
And are you bothering Vamps when a model is delayed or postponed for some reason? Like, just send me the file or just send me the projections.
I'm probably one of the ones that doesn't bother him. I let everybody else do the bothering. Everybody else will get on these cases.
No one really bothers me, to be honest. And I'm being genuinely that I think that I've got my own Discord and the community in there is, you know, it's very rare someone's going, where's the model? Where's the model? Because it's very rare that I don't have it out usually on a Thursday night for Friday or on a Friday night for Saturday. I tend to always have those deadlines for myself because I want my weekend to do what I want to do out away from it, because you've got to have that balance.
Yeah. I think there's also a good thing about playing multiple fantasy games, right? Because like when you play on the FPL and if things are not going well, which, you know, can happen, football is very random, then you probably have one other game that things are going well. So you can kind of like switch on to that one, I guess.
It does, but then you also probably have more likely a lot more that aren't. Some weeks it's horrible and they all go wrong, but sometimes you have a week when everything goes well.
It's just
the nature of the game, isn't it?
I can't see it. And regarding the projection model, I have one more question. Ted Lasso Regen from Discord asks if there's room for further advancements in model accuracy. What do you think about it?
For myself, I think it's there's still lots to do. I'm probably where FPL review was 5 or 6 years ago, let's be perfectly honest. And the difference with mine is that for someone like for review, for example, or Nanning with Allsvenskan, he has one model and he can put all his time into it. The minutes can be a lot more clearer. They can understand if there is the nuance between positions, they probably be able to react quicker to that, whereas because I'm playing that many, I'm not going to know if a left back in Australian football is playing up front this week. but I still play the game because that's what I do. And I still model it. So my models will always probably have a limitation as it stands with me doing it on my own without those experts per se, because there's always going to be that element of not knowing everything. So from my models, the data, yeah, there's gaps in data where you've got players coming from new leagues and you have to model that in to say, well, actually, I don't know enough about it yet, sorry. Mm-hmm. And that will have an impact on what the EVs are. But in the same sense, I think the biggest way for any model now is the minutes. It's predicting when the players are going to play. And I've got a way of doing that, which I think adds a lot of value to it. I think it's probably something that probably comes out quite well in the models, is how I try and manage and sort of model the minutes playing. But for me, that's the biggest for all models now. It's working out the who's going to play and who's not, because that's the most important part.
Yeah, I agree. And okay, let's talk about using these models. I have a few questions on this topic. So I will start with Jag, actually. So you said you're, you know, using data for fantasy games, but you also mentioned that, first of all, you're a little bit grass. And also you talked about like model buster players. So how do you use data for these fantasy games? Suppose like you got the file from Vamps about these projections about certain players. So when you're making a decision, do you involve your personal perception of players, and in general, like how do you play?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, with the sort of international games that we play, like the Norwegian, Swedish, Scottish and stuff like that, there will be an element of fan bias. So if I pick up things that fans are saying about their team or position changes and things like that, that will eat into a lot of my own personal bias as well. So I do sort of take a lot of information from other managers that are sort of more closely following the leagues. Mm-hmm. But with the data models that obviously Vamps does put out, I sort of use them as, I would say, confirmation that the decisions that I'm making are correct. So if I see a move that I want to make and the EVs don't match up with Vamps' models, then I know that there's probably something that I've done wrong, or that the way that I'm thinking isn't right. And then I sort of go back and I'll correct what sort of biases that I've made up that aren't correct.
Nice. Okay. Then when you're using the model, like suppose there's a conflict, you're pretty sure that player A is a good pick, and Vamps' model says, no, this player B, which is much better. And suppose the minute is not an issue, you're just talking about the player's quality, perhaps. Then what will be the tiebreaker for you? Like, do you still go with what you believe in, or do you have more trust in his model? I'm sort of like, as if I'm trying to set you guys for a fight.
Yeah, you want us to fight. Yeah. No, there is sort of, I do place a lot of trust in Vamps models, but if there is a player that I have a really strong feeling on, like, because I will watch a lot of Norwegian games, like on betting sites, you're able to see the full game, so I do spend a lot of time watching them. If there is a player that I've seen that I think is good and it doesn't sort of match up with Vamps' models, I will go with my gut. So as I say, there is still that grass there that I can't shake you just yet.
Okay, and when it happens, do you also let Vamps know about it? That like, oh, this guy is pretty good, but your model is just not.
I'd probably only let him know if the model got it right and I got it wrong. Otherwise, I wouldn't want to gloat.
I love it. So Vic from our Discord asks if there's any benefit of using more than one model. I feel like we have only a single model for most games, but there are a few games where there are multiple models. So for those games, do you use multiple models, Jack?
Well, I mean, I think Vic is probably asking about Mikkel, because he's a big Mikkel user.
Mikkel, he is.
So I think he's just trying to get Mikkel bigged up on the podcast. But yeah, with All Svenskan, we've also got Nanning's model that we use for
that. Yes.
And when I was using when I was using the model data, there was sort of a I was using a 50-50 split of both from a ported version of your solver that Hibbo and a couple of other people on the Discord had set up. So yeah, there is definitely value in taking two sets of data and mashing them up. And even using them separately, so doing one solve with Nanning's, one solve with Vamps, and then seeing where the differences are. And it sort of helps for that confirmation bias.
And I also want to ask Vamps about it, because you said you also have a model, but you're using FBI Review. So do you ever run optimization on your own projections to see if you're getting a different recommendations for a transfer, or do you just use FBI Review for FBL purposes?
With FPL, it tends to be just FPL Review, but because I use my models for, say, fan team for Real Fever, you kind of see players in that you don't see in Review, and you, it does make you think, well, is there something I'm missing here? And it might be my minutes. It might be because I've got something different in that. And probably from my point of view, I tend to trust the model. So, and I know Review have been, you know, I would say it's a super, everyone would say it's a superior product of mine, and I'm being that, and I mean that in the most genuine way. I trust the minutes on there, but maybe I shouldn't trust it as much. But then I'm saying that, and I'm 124, so I can't, it can't be that bad, can it? Let's be honest, because I do very little changes to minutes unless I've really got a strong feeling on it. So yeah, but I see the benefit of those who use both models, especially with like the Allsvenskan, for example. Last year, I just used mine because that's what I want to do. But I know with, like I said before, with Nanning, his minutes predictions will far outweigh mine, and I've said that before because it's his only model. So I think his will be a lot better on predicting who's going to play minutes, whereas I'm going off a more of a data based decision. On how many minutes are going to play. So I see the benefit of using more than one. And I know you've done that before previously with the FPL ones, Sertab. So I know you've seen that benefit as well.
Then for you, Vamps, when you have a model for, let's say, the Norwegian fantasy game, you generated the projections, you calculated the optimal team. Again, the same question. Do you involve your own personal perception on players so that, like, you do you differ from the optimal team you are getting from the solver, or do you follow solver most of the time?
This is an interesting one, this, because this is where I think you have to be a bit more grass, especially with what I would say is the less high-profile leagues. So, for example, I've run a quick solve today. And it's given me a prediction for game week one, which is next week. It's not based on anything more than last year's data, last year's minutes. And it's brought out some of the ones you would expect to see, but there are certain ones that's not. And you have to be ready to flex into that a little bit more in terms of what the model says and doesn't say. So I'll give you an example. There's a player who... is quite popular at the moment for game week one, who's called Fredrik Gulbrandsen. So he's a Norwegian striker. He's 31 years old. He's got a 1-in-4 goal record across sort of multiple leagues, Austria, MLS, Turkey. So he's not got a great record. He's got last time he got double figures was 2017. Last year his numbers, he got a 0.21 non-penalty XG, 0.02 XA. From seven games, he got two goals. Average minutes of 51 minutes a game. His data will not show anywhere near being the sort of pick you want for your team this year. Even if you upped his minutes to sort of 80, 90, he's still not showing very well. If you look at his last four games, for example, that he's played in Europe this in the last 2 months, he's got five goals. His non-penalty XG is 1.37. He's in a great run of form. But if you believe in form, but that's another for another pod. I know everyone's going to be shouting sample size, and that's what we're all saying the same. But he's 11 million in Norwegian fantasy. He's 52.7% owned, which is the fourth highest in total. He's the second highest striker in ownership. He's got double game week in game week three, and he plays for one of the two best teams in the league. Now, if I went off the model, I'm not picking him, but I'd be mad not to, because I've got to, because he's, because in that league, you can't always pick the players who are the data kings, because there's always going to be someone who's coming through the league, who's just joined and it's taken a little while and the data isn't there. You just have to trust the crowds is what I would say. Ultimately, there's the herd mentality's there, and you sometimes in these leagues have to go a little bit vanilla, go with whoever else is picking, especially at the start, and then you'll start to see the data come in, and then you can start making those differences where you can see the ones where actually there's not many of us using the model.
Yeah,
and we can see that someone's showing up in the right space with a decent sample size. Yeah. We can go, actually, that's the one I want to put in now. You kind of have to trust the data, but also trust the crowds, especially at the start. Otherwise, you just get left behind. And you kind of learn those tactics as you go, especially with modeling, that you just have to go with it. There's a lot of other stuff in Elite Serien as well. Like, for example, the double game weeks are early, so you have to attack them. Some of the chips are awful. People know how much I hate the attack chip. It's the worst chip in any fantasy game that I would play. Basically, your three strikers are captains, but you'll find that the majority of the time in Elite Serien fantasy, your midfielders are the best players, and they have been for a number of years. So you have to break your team, basically, to get three strikers in.
I see.
Because 3-5-2 tends to be quite a heavy formation that game. So I know that chip is going to probably have to go in game week three, because the best strikers in the game are all playing in that week in a double. So I'd be mad not to. So again, you have to take all this into account when you're making decisions in games where it is a lot more volatile.
I see. And before the recording, we were just chatting with you a bit, and you talked about the psychology of it, and you kind of like touched on that point while you were answering. So then when playing the game, for example, you also talked about, wisdom of the crowd, sort of. So then for you, like, how important is the psychology of decision making, not beyond the data? Like, do you think that's one of the like core components of the game, like including FPL obviously, but in general for all the fantasy games?
I actually think it's probably the most important.
The most important.
I genuinely do. I think I've got a bit of a reputation for having a lot of proverbs and phrases and everything else between people that know me, but it's because I think FPL Raptor was definitely one that brought this into the fore a couple, two or three years ago with his book about the psychology of fantasy football. And I think you need to really be able to understand you as a person before you play this game at what is the best for you. Like, I know I'm a risk averse person. I know that I'm not emotional. I struggle with emotion. That's just who I am as a person. So data suits me. But there's people out there who aren't. People do make emotional decisions, and they need to make emotional decisions because that's how they deal with it and that's how they cope with it. If you try and be something you're not, you'll get very frustrated very quickly, and you'll lose interest in what is a game. And that's what we're here to. We're playing a game. There's nothing more than that, and it should be enjoyable. So I think the psychology aspect of fantasy football, along with like poker and just in life, understanding how you work as a person, I think really makes a difference to this. I know I spend a lot of time really analysing who I am as a person and how I need to play to be happy and to enjoy this game and to enjoy the fact that some weeks it's going to be bad. So what? It is. So what? It's a game. Let's just make the best decisions we can, hope for the best. That's what it's all about, really. So that's how I play the game.
That's true. And Jack, what do you think like about the psychology of the game?
Well, with Vamps, he's always preaching trust in your decisions that you make, not the outcomes. But I do find that part very, very hard. And obviously, if there is a decision that I sort of feel strongly about and I make that decision and it does go wrong, I find it tougher to sort of think, oh, well, I made the right decision in foresight and it might not have worked out. That's not something that I can do very easy. So, yeah, it is a more emotional game for me compared to most people.
I mean, it's a little bit strange. I mean, from my angle, I mean, obviously, like, I'm heavy on analytics and I just, you know, trust numbers a little bit more than most people do. But I agree, the psychology part is important. You know, sometimes you are not really happy with some of the decisions. If they, you know, turn out to be wrong, you get more upset. So if I was not playing with an optimization model at all, then I would probably tend to be risk averse, I will say. Like, I still find it easy to blame the model when things go wrong and then, you know, be in peace with it. But, you know, there are certain game weeks where, like, everything goes wrong. Like, all of your players playing, like, just like the free hit. Then you just kind of, like, think about your life decisions, I guess. You talked about the chip you hated, but how about the good chips? Like, what's your favorite chip from other fantasy games that maybe you would like to see in FPL?
The ones that came to mind with me were, there's three games that I think they've got a really good chip, or at least chip strategies. So Scotland, so Scottish Fantasy allows you to play every chip in 1 week.
Oh.
Like, so you can wild card, you can bench boost, you can triple captain, you can do it all in 1 week. Now, for me, that just, you can really attack the double game weeks. Jack had an absolutely brilliant week the other week. And he didn't do it. I attacked 1 week and did everything in 1 week. And if I say the triple captain for 3 weeks later, I would have got an extra 70 points. And I'm being genuinely serious. That's how big, always captain James Tavernier, it is. That is the only rule of Scottish fantasy. So yeah, Scotland's definitely got it right, where you can just do it all in one go and really attack a week. Gaffer is brilliant. I think it's probably the best game for boosts. I'll call them boosts, they're not chips. They are the best for any game. So they have such variety. They have, for example, like away days where all your away players get double points. You've got Jeepers Keepers, which is like you get extra bonus points for your clean sheets and your saves. Okay. So I think they've really got a great balance to keep it interesting. And you get more because they do it every sort of 15, 16 weeks. Mm-hmm. So you get a lot more of them throughout the season. It has a lot more variation. The one chip I like the most on its own is the Lone Ranger, which is in Allsvenskan, because you can literally have 15 players from one team. It doesn't. They just take away all the restrictions on players. So you can you still have your bank. So you can't do any more than that. So it's not like you've got a free bank of money, but you can pick all 11 from one team. Now, sometimes you would do that. I've seen it happen where someone had a double and they've all gone in on that. But you could, in theory, have a blanket defense and then your blanket attack for two double teams, for example, or mix and match or both, where you have 5 or 6 from both. I really like that chip. I think it's just one way. It just gives that extra variety to the normal chips that we get.
Wow. That sounds fun. Like having more than, you know, 3 players from a single team. And how about you, Jack? Do you have any favorite chip from other fantasy games?
I mean, I agree Allsvenskan have done it well with the chips that they have. Obviously, the game's a similar format to FPL. It's run by the same sort of system. But so the Lone Rangers is a good one, which is the free hit. And you can, like, if you've got a small double game week, for example, the one we're expecting with Chelsea and Brighton, you could have 5 Chelsea, 5 Brighton, and you could fill out your team that sort of way. So that's a good one. Park the Bus is another one that they've got, which is all of your defenders get double points in 1 week. If there's a tight captaincy decision or there's one team that you're sort of sure on, or one or two teams that you're sure on, you can go blanket defense with 5 players, and that's a really good chip as well. But yeah, they're 2 good ones.
Okay, awesome. And you said the Norwegian and the Swedish game are starting soon, right?
Next weekend.
Thanks, Ryan.
do you have the models ready already, Vems? And do you have an optimal team that you can share?
Elite Serien's ready. All Svenskan's probably going to be end of the week, I would say. I'm working on it. But yeah, I've got, as I said, the optimal team at the moment probably isn't 100% where it needs to be because it is early provisional models, but I can talk through it if you want to, if that helps.
Sure.
So goalkeepers, I've got Bratvite and Selvik. Oh my God, my pronunciation is going to be awful.
I'm glad you're doing it and not me.
Yeah.
Defence is quite heavy. So we've got Solvet, who's 7 million, Bjorken, who's 6, Haugen, who's 7, Old Man Rude, who's 5, he's older than me, so he must be old. He's 5.5 million. And then Linnes, who's 6.5. So it's quite heavy at the back. Midfield, you've got Grunbeck, I'm going to say is how you pronounce it, who's probably the best asset in the game, in all honesty. You got Yttergaard Jensen, who's dirt cheap, but he's been a bonus king for years in that game. Breivik, who plays for Molde, Berg, and then Hornmira, who's apparently injured. So I don't know how, like, it says mid-April, so he might be back for the double. So whether it's one you want to hold at the start, I'm not 100% sure. And then up front at the moment, I've got Bard Finner, and then two of the new boys from the promoted teams. There's a lad called Nunes and another striker called Johansson. But they're both really dirt cheap sort of options where they were the best strikers for those teams. My models with Norway tend to avoid strikers, which is probably why I'm also averse to the attack chip. It just doesn't like them. And it's probably because you'll probably find with the defenders, they're more likely to have the stronger minutes. So I think it weights more at the back in that game than others. And you know that about, that's probably the good thing about having a model. You know how it works. Yeah. I know it prefers the defenders. And it has from that, the cheapest defender's 5.5 million. So you know it's trying to think, double game week, I'm going big at the back because I'm more sure of the minutes. So yeah, that's where I'm at the moment with the Norwegian one, but that's just provisional, very likely to change before next week.
Okay. And Jack, your draft is similar or what do you think?
It's actually quite a bit different. There's a few players that are in there that will sort of have position changes, or like Breivik, who won't be on pens because the new guy Gulbrandsen is going to be on pens. So there's sort of a few players, like, you can tell this team is done by a model. And there will be sort of, the template will be very different to this, because this isn't looking at chip strategies and things like that yet. So we know we're going to want 3 strikers at the beginning. So there will be a lot of changes to this team here, but these are the ones who show up well on data and are sort of consistent. So it makes sense that that's why the model's spat out this team.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So we talked about your journey so far a little bit, but I'm also wondering what you think about the future of fantasy games in general, like fantasy football games. Because obviously there were lots of discussions about whether the game is sold and then it's no longer fun and ethics is ruining the game. So where do we go from here? Or personally, where do you go from here? Like, do you think analytics will be more commonplace? Like, for, you know, selections like this, you said that, you know, this selection is different from what the template will be. Do you think we will ever see a time where the template is just analytics template?
For these sort of games, the international games, it won't be. We won't be able to get there because there's so much chopping and changing. The players are moving on to bigger and better leagues. Mm-hmm. So that it is, the good players will always be moving on at the end of the season. So there will always be chopping and changing. So we won't have the data there for us to have an analytics template be the main team. But with FPL being solved, that's all rubbish. I mean, you just have to look at the top 5 teams in the league, and every single one of them is different. Everyone sort of got their own X minutes that they cook up and different biases that they have. Whether people say that they use the models full stop, you can always tell that there's different personal biases. Like, it's one that I've been caught out with a lot last couple of seasons, not going for defensive midfielders. So like Douglas Luiz, even though he was on pens, I didn't bother getting him. Or like Gundogan in past season, where he went on a huge spree and I just wouldn't get him in because he wasn't a player that I liked. Almiron was another one that I remember where he was just on a huge spree because I didn't like the player and I thought it was unsustainable. I wouldn't go there. So there is sort of there's always going to be variety whichever way you choose to play the game.
Yeah. And how about you, Vems? What do you think?
The greatest example I can give here is that I'm currently in my own mini league with three other managers. One of them being Jack, the other one being Ross M, who's also on the Discord, and also Jonas, who's also just sort of started meshing a bit more on the Discord. But we're kind of in my head, I've got my mini league with these other three people. And bearing in mind I'm 124th, I'm bottom. Which is I'm not even the best track in my own league, which is in my own head, which is wonderful. But if you look at the last 2 weeks, for example, Jack wildcarded in 28 and rolled last week. Me and Ross free-hitted in 29 and Jonas did absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. And I think he'll probably wildcard maybe this week, maybe the week after. I'll see what he feels like. So even though we're four analytics managers who talk practically every day, most days about fantasy football, nearly all of us have a different plan.
Yeah,
and that just says it all, really. And I know we all have different degrees of how we interpret the data. We all have different variations on what our risk appetite is. We all have our own versions of how much grass we want to eat. Like ultimately, we all have differences, and that is. And like I said, knowing who you are as a manager is an absolutely vital part of this game, and it will never change. You're never going to have everyone with the same team, because ultimately we will all have our own thoughts, our own opinions, because we're all human.
It's just incredible that you are all in top 150, I should say. Like, that's just amazing. But you talked about risk appetite, and you also said you're risk averse. Does it mean that you always go for players with, you know, more predictable minutes, like predictable higher minutes in your selection?
I would say that I'd say minutes is probably king. I mean, if you look at how I set up review, for example, risk position I set to 0.15, and that is standard. And I don't know if anyone else even touches that one, but I made that an absolute priority to pull it up higher because I want to be risk averse. And if you look at the season review, I was having a quick look at it earlier just to get some stats on this. So my differential EV this season is 28%. My shared EV, 94.7 is shared EV. My captain points is 47.2%. Can I get any more bland than being the average captain pick for the whole season? I think that says everything. I am a bland, boring manager who plays risk averse. And I genuinely thought that would never get me anywhere near the top 100, let's be honest, because I always say that the ones who win the game are the ones who captain Son instead of the Kane, or captain Diaz instead of Salah in those weeks where he just goes mental and you just go, why have you done that? Like, the part of me doesn't get that. But like an example is, I normally get absolutely criticized for always captaining Haaland. Yeah. But for me, we're talking about, for my enjoyment of the game, I can't enjoy playing a game where I'm going against the one person that if he goes mental, it ruins the game. Like, ultimately, I'm going in the wrong, only one direction. If I always captain the one who has the highest EO, I am going to come out with some kind of green.
Yeah.
And it sounds mad, but I'd rather have 38 green arrows than, well, it can't be half that many, 37 green arrows than one big one and one small one, because I know I'll feel much worse on a personal level if I've dropped 50k rather than have a 2,000 green arrow when I could have had a 50,000 green arrow. Do you know what I mean? It's that,
yeah,
that, but that's me knowing me. I know that's my risk appetite, and I know that also makes me comfortable, you know. So, yeah, I am Mr. Bland, I'm Mr. Boring.
Okay, well, you're doing great, so maybe there is some merit to it. But, Jack, how about you? Like, do you crave risk? Do you go for risk? Do you thrive in a risky environment?
Yes. I mean, I sort of, Jack's always said it to me as well, about me taking risks, or it was a problem in recent seasons where I would take too many hits and I would always chase the higher differential captain, and I wouldn't sort of go with the crowd. And you can see, if you was to look at my FPL record, you'd be able to see that I've been taking too many stupid risks. And it's sort of something that I've been, when I've been talking to these guys, like obviously the little group that we've got, Jack and Ross and Jonas, and sort of trying to play the game a bit more smart. It's sort of taking risks is something that I'm sort of trying to take out of my game. But I will still take risks to get to a higher rank. I'd rather finish number one than finish 100th and play safe or something like that. So I will still take risks. And that's why I sort of went early with my wild card. I knew everyone was going to be free hitting this week, so I wanted to go early with the wild card and try and snatch sort of short-term EV. And then try and make my games with a wild card. I mean, with a free hit in a week where everyone else won't have that there. So that's sort of the way that I'm getting my risk now, is by going different chip strategies, but still trying to stay with the crowd with the high EO players.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. Like, I know people are very much obsessed about the fractional EV differences between chip strategies, and they try to go with the highest one. But like, if you're using a solver, like even if you go with a, you know, slightly different chip strategy, I think you can still do pretty well. I mean, in terms of the outcome.
Well, we'll see where it ends up at the end of the season anyway. I might end up plummeting now when everyone gets their like wild cards.
We'll see. But yeah, I have high hopes for you.
I'm looking forward to Captain Hindsight's all over the place, is all I'm saying.
Definitely. There will be.
So let's talk about personal preferences. Ted Lasso Regen asked about your Jack's bias towards West Ham players, Moyes' future, and emotional conflicts of owning players scoring against West Ham. So what do you want to say about it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of used to players scoring against West Ham now anyway. That's part of the joys of being a West Ham fan. But yeah, I do sort of have a bias where, and it is sort of an unconscious bias, but it will pop up where I don't like owning players from my team, apart from Jared Bowen. But I wouldn't, I try not to recommend the players from West Ham to any other people as well. But yeah, it's sort of, when I have players that play against us that are scoring, there is sort of a celebration that I'm getting my FPL points, but it is sort of still upsetting that they're beating my team. I had Saka in whenever he got his 16 points, and Garnacho got 16 points against us in back-to-back weeks. I'll still say I'll always be West Ham first, so it still always upset me. But getting the FPL points is a nice bonus that sort of offsets it a little bit.
Yeah, that's it. And Vams, how about you? Well, you don't have a team in Premier League, but you before the recording, you told me that you had two teams in Premier League. So do you feel like extra motivated to buy players who are playing against them? Maybe? No?
Nah.
No biases.
Football is football. It's a game. If I have to buy a Wolves or a Forest player, it doesn't matter to me. All that matters is ultimately that I'm making the decision that looks like the right one, and if they win, so be it. It's football, isn't it?
Yeah, true. And you also said that your dad, when he was playing, he was avoiding certain players. Is that correct?
Raheem Sterling hates him. Won't touch him. Won't go near him. Even if he was on the run of his life, he would not pick him in any fancy team. He would have felt the same way about Emil Heskey as well. But I think that's bit before our time.
I feel like bias against a team is very, I will say, maybe common. Like, even sometimes, like, you know, we have a running joke about like banning Everton players. I feel strongly about a team, either, you know, in a good way or a bad way. But
Everton, you know, sorry,
but like, I don't know, like avoiding a player.
He just didn't agree with his moral standing, is all I would say. I'm going to put that in the nicest way.
We had a discussion about Ronaldo the same way, I guess.
But ultimately, a player is a player. For me, don't matter.
Yeah, I think the same.
Oh, well, I didn't answer Ted's question as well. Moyes in and Moyes out.
Oh yeah,
I'd be happy for him to go at the end of the season. I feel like we've sort of like we're seventh in the table at the minute, and we're getting results at certain points, but we're not playing decent enough football. It just feels like we've hit a plateau, like we've hit the ceiling, and there isn't anywhere else for us to go with Moyes. So Moyes out.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
I have spent my evening with my boss, who is a West Ham fan, and he says the exact same thing. And I genuinely agree. I think Moyes is a great manager for getting you to a place, and he's got you to that place. And I think West Ham have the opportunity to be a top six team. Genuinely think you do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not going to get you there. That's my opinion. Thank you very much, David. You got us into Europe. You won us a tournament. You've kept us in the Premier League. You made a better team, but you're not going to take us to the next level. You're out the door. Goodbye. That's what I think you should do.
So cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
And but don't get me wrong. I do expect, like, we could have another manager come in and we'll be in a relegation fight next year. But I don't think we'll go any further with Moyes. So there's no point hanging around with him.
And I will apologize because, yeah, I'm short of time, so I'm going to skip some of the questions that people ask on Discord. But as a last question to Jack, what's your favorite emoji in our Discord server?
favorite emoji? Probably KW is the one I use the most, so I'll say that's my favorite.
That's great. True. And at the description of this episode, I will also share Vem's Discord server. Well, if only he is okay with it. It's fine.
Absolutely fine. Absolutely yeah. Fine.
And in his Discord, you can find these projection models for other fantasy games if you're interested in those. As we wrap up this episode, a heartfelt thank you goes both to Vems and Jack for sharing their invaluable insights and experiences in the world of fantasy football analytics. And to our listeners, we hope this deep dive enriches your strategy when you approach these fantasy football games, and it helps you to explore new angles. Well, this has been episode 85 of the FPL Optimized podcast. I'm Sartav, wishing you success in your fantasy leagues and upcoming fantasy games, wherever you are using analytics and analytics-driven strategies. And remember to subscribe and follow us on Twitter. And also, we are on YouTube this season. And obviously, we are in your podcast apps if you're listening already. And we are wishing you good luck. We will be back next week with Buzz to talk about Game Week 30 and talk about, the chip strategies, obviously. And until next time, stay curious and stay analytical. Goodbye.